Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
Virginia, Brazil, 1996. Reports begin to appear in media around the world that the Brazilian military has captured an extraterrestrial being. The government officially denies it, but others accuse them of a cover-up. Ufologist Roger Lear of California would later interview a number of witnesses and learns there were actually two beings. Both were taken to a local medical clinic, one reportedly injured. Doctors and nurses at the clinic described the creatures to Lear as about 5 feet tall, with a large head and a very thin body, with brown skin and large red eyes, appearing somewhat paranormal. However, the staff would say that before any in-depth study or treatment of the beings could take place, the military removed the creatures to an undisclosed location.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the show about extraterrestrials and UFOs, asking the question, are we alone? In Alien Nation, I talk to other Earthlings about their otherworldly encounters, and we love hearing your stories, so please get in touch. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. My guest today has lectured on UFOs around the world, appeared on BBC and Channel 4. And has written for many publications. He's the author of the book Silver Screen Sources, Sorting Fact from Fantasy in Hollywood's UFO Movies. Welcome, Robbie Graham.
Pleasure to be on your show.
Now tell me, I'd like to know how you first got interested in the subject of UFOs.
I'll try and keep it short as possible, given that we have only limited time. So I've been interested in UFOs since childhood. Not through direct experience, but through just natural sort of curiosity, really, yeah. I suppose. I was reading books here and there from the ages of about 9 or 10. But then I started to get seriously interested in my mid-teens. There was a UFO incident that occurred in my village growing up in Staffordshire, yeah. which attracted sort of the attention of the local media. And it was involving a schoolmate of mine who was in my class at primary school, and it turned out to be sort of a close encounter of the second kind, quite dramatic.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, of course, when you're a kid, you don't know what to make of it, and you just think, oh, well, flying saucers, you know, come down and stuff, and you don't really think anything of it. I was fascinated by the idea that something may have happened. But again, when your friend who's 8 years old comes into the playground and says a flying saucer's landed on the car the day before, you take it with a pinch of salt, but at the same time, you think, could it be? And yeah. As I say, the case did start to attract some media attention, and many years later, the Ministry of Defence did release some files on the incident, and it was part of a greater UFO wave that was occurring throughout Staffordshire during the summer of 1988. So, you know, this really sort of planted the seed of UFOs and the idea that there may be something greater than us out there in my mind from an early age. And then, as I say, I never really saw anything. But I've seen a handful of what might be termed unidentified flying objects over the years. In the most clinical sense of the term, things that are in the sky that I couldn't readily identify, but nothing that was jaw-dropping or paradigm-shifting. Yeah. But I've known many people who have had extraordinary experiences with this phenomenon. So it's something that's been a natural interest for me throughout my life, that intensified in my teens, and then I eventually started to find a way to express my interest in writing and through the lens of cinema, really, as well.
Yes,
that was what my academic
your main focus is really how UFOs are portrayed in Hollywood, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Academically, I studied film at universities and I taught it for a while as well. So this is sort of my other passion in life was film and the power of cinema. And I noticed that no one was really paying too great attention to the role of cinema in ufology and how movies shape popular perceptions, well, of the world around us generally, but also including UFOs.
Yeah.
And there had been a couple of books that had been written on the subject about 1997 and 1998, but there really hadn't been anything comprehensive or detailed in the years since. And so I thought I might put my expertise to use by starting to dissect Hollywood UFO movies going right back to 1950 and looking at the cultural and political interplay between the UFO phenomenon and Hollywood. And the entertainment industry more broadly, and I was very interested in how this cultural medium affects our perceptions of what we now know to be an ontologically real phenomenon, whatever it actually represents.
Yeah, and how do you think that has affected people? That you know how it's portrayed.
It's a big question, and it's. You know, the filmmaker Ken Russell once said Hollywood fills the gaps in our knowledge of the world.
Mm.
And I think that's a very true statement. I don't think we are really aware of the extent to which entertainment media, and particularly Hollywood and movies, which are sort of self-contained narratives that contextualize our world. They help us make sense of the world through a narrative process. And any subject that is put on film in the cinematic medium, I think, makes a significant sort of psychic impact on us. It informs our perceptions and our understanding of the world around us. And as I say, that's crucial when it comes to something like UFOs, which until very recently, official culture didn't really acknowledge as a reality. They were always something as a fringe topic, and they still remain a fringe topic. However, that is starting to shift now. Because the mainstream media is starting to pay greater attention to the subject in light of the Pentagon revelations that happened in 2017.
Yeah.
So up until very recently, and as I say, still ongoing, UFOs have never really been acknowledged as a serious topic or something that's even real. And
yeah.
So I think when Hollywood engages with that topic, we have to really actively engage with these products to understand how they're making us think about the possibilities that are involved here. So there's all sorts of ways you can tackle it.
I think that Hollywood are doing movies of UFO movies and alien movies to help break us into the fact that there really are out there.
Yeah, this is the acclimation theory. This is a theory that's been around for many years, where people speculate that Hollywood is being sort of used as a tool to acclimate the public to the reality of UFOs, to sort of pave the way towards disclosure and so people can accept the realities involved here.
Mm.
It is an interesting theory, and it's one that I explore in great detail in my book, Silver Screen Sources, and I look at this notion of a Hollywood UFO conspiracy. And you can see why people, you know, do believe that this is the case, that there is this kind of acclimation agenda in play. It's more complicated than that, I would say. I think it's less about... So first of all, in the early years of the phenomenon, in the 50s and 60s, the American government and the Air Force, the US Air Force, were heavily involved in debunking and demystifying UFOs through media channels. And so, you know, the CIA Robertson panel suggested that the public interest could be dangerous, like this could cause hysteria. So they wanted to downplay public interest in UFOs and delegitimize the subject in the popular consciousness. And so in order to do that, they exploited mass media, entertainment media, news media, and they sort of poo-pooed the subject through those mediums.
Yeah, they made it out to be a joke, really, didn't they?
They did, and we're still living with the legacy of those programs, of those efforts. You know, those original efforts to ridicule the subject still inform our perceptions of the subject today. However, as the years went by, I think fairly rapidly that the powers that be recognised that they couldn't successfully completely debunk and demystify this subject. Mm. Because the fact is that UFOs, whatever they are real, and they do directly impact certain people's lives, and also, of course, they were affecting the military as well. The military were deeply concerned about UFOs. They had their own study programs ongoing for over many decades, and they recognized this as a reality behind the scenes as well. So they recognized that if you can't completely debunk and demystify the subject in the popular consciousness, what you can do is you can manage how people perceive the phenomenon. So it becomes less about debunking or acclimating and more about perception management, managing how people perceive a phenomenon that is with us and that will not go away.
So who is it that is actually managing it then? There's Hollywood directors. Who? Obviously not. It must be higher than that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a very hard question to answer. And as with many things in the UFO subject, a lot of it comes down to a certain amount of speculation, and it's important to stress that. What we do know, I mean, some things we can say for certain, in terms of the history of the American government and military and their involvement in Hollywood, that's very well documented. There's been numerous books and academic studies done on this particular topic. The Air Force has been deeply involved. Every branch of the US military has been deeply involved in Hollywood for many years, including as well as the CIA and various other intelligence branches. And the effort, and of course that's because they recognize Hollywood as an incredibly influential medium. They recognize cinema as an incredibly influential medium and essential to really shaping how people perceive political, cultural events and phenomena. Yeah. And so, in terms of the people, like, you know, if the question is who's involved, you know, who's at the top, who's making the decisions, who's pulling the levers, there's been various things written about that over the years. And again, it is speculation. The idea of a control group, a majestic 12-star control group, et cetera, et cetera. But on a less conspiratorial, less fantastical level, what you're dealing with is the Air Force, for example. As I say, they were concerned about UFOs because their pilots were encountering UFOs in the skies, and they had to tackle it as a potential defense threat. And so they were concerned about how the public perceived this phenomenon as well, because at the time they didn't know if UFOs were Russian or even some of the earthly technologies that they hadn't discovered or understood, or they also considered the interplanetary hypothesis as well. So they were concerned about the phenomenon, and they wanted popular perception to be in line with what best suited them, and so they made tweaks to various productions in Hollywood over the years, documentaries, films, TV shows. As I say, traditionally that was towards debunking and demystifying a phenomenon.
Yeah.
As time went by, they started to get, and when I say they, I'm literally referring, I don't mean a they as in a, some kind of mysterious they, I mean literally the Air Force and the CIA. And this is all in their own documentation as well. So this is not speculation. We know that as an institution, the Air Force and the CIA were very concerned about the phenomenon and did make efforts to manipulate various media channels in order to sort of push a certain agenda. Now, as time went on, as I say, they sort of softened their stance on UFOs. There was a time that for a long time, the military refused flat out to be involved in any production that involved UFOs, because they didn't want to encourage belief in the subject. Now, but beginning in the sort of the late 80s and into the 90s, the military started to say, okay, we will cooperate on some UFO movies, like, you know, big budget Hollywood UFO movies and things like that. And the reason I believe they did that was because, again, they recognized that they couldn't make people not believe, but what they could do is they could manage how people perceive the phenomenon, and one of the best ways to do that is to have an active involvement in the media industry, because of course that's one of the core things that shapes our understanding of the world around us. And so over time you've started to see a portrayal of the phenomenon that is more in line with how the military wishes it to be perceived, and it's a portrayal in which the military comes off very well, that the military seems to have a very good understanding of the phenomenon in these media products. So like in films like Transformers, for example, or Battle Los Angeles, or there's numerous movies that I look at in my book. All of these films have been supported by the US military. They've essentially been co-produced by the Air Force.
That's amazing.
And their scripts have been co-written by you know, or heavily influenced by Air Force and military staffers as well. So what we're consuming is essentially propaganda. It's essentially, soft propaganda, but we don't recognize that because it's not illegal. It's a perfectly legal system, and it's been in place for years, where the filmmakers will sign a contract, literally sign a contract with various branches of the military, with the Pentagon, which gives them control, which gives the military the control to influence the script and to influence the production at every level, from pre-production to post-production.
So it will give them the information they want us to have, and
correct,
not
correct.
All, but not also sort of make sure we don't have too much information.
Correct. It's more sort of tweaking it. In you know what you'll find in any American movie that is on the subject of UFOs that has been backed by the Department of Defense, and there are an increasing number of these. All of those movies uniformly portray the phenomenon as being hostile, right? Okay, which enables the military to be portrayed as
the heroes, yeah.
Correct. So you know, there seems to be an agenda to make people fear the phenomenon, make people worry about the possibility of extraterrestrial invasion, and in such a scenario, the military would come to our rescue. The military have full control of the situation. They understand what's going on, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I suppose they're bound to do that, aren't they? Yeah.
They are. I mean, of course they are. Whenever the US military does involve itself in a UFO-themed production, there is the opportunity there for them to exploit fears around the subject, for them to massage people's perceptions and expectations of the phenomenon that's more in line with what they might want
us to know, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's amazing, isn't it, that they have that much control over us. They have control what we're watching.
To an extent, yeah. I mean, well, to a significant extent, yeah. It's very worrying, and that's why I think it's so important that people understand how the media works at a corporate and political level.
Yeah. What do you think is the most authentic Hollywood UFO movie that has been made?
I mean, I think most people would say Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Steven Spielberg's 1977 movie.
Love that.
And I would have to, yeah, it's probably my favourite film. It's a great, great movie, and I think it really captures the wonder that people experience or feel when they have an experience, or when they think about, you know, first contact with an alien species. It's an incredible movie. This is a film that was essentially based on the work of the famous ufologist J. Allen Hynek, heavily influenced by Hynek's work. And in fact, the title of the movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, comes from Hynek's classification system for UFO sightings, wherein he posited close encounters of the first, second, third kind. Third kind being, you know, close encounter, you know, a close experience with a UFO within 500 yards, in which you encounter alien beings or non-human beings. And so Spielberg literally took that title from Hynek's work. And Hynek, of course, appears in the movie in a cameo role towards the end and advised on it as well. So, and as did Jacques Vallée, the famous ufologist. So this is a movie that really includes a lot of accurate ufological flourishes. Although the movie itself is fiction, there's a lot of details in there which I think a lot of UFO experiences can appreciate as being authentic and accurate.
Oh, isn't that cool? Ah, that's really interesting. I'm going to have to watch that again. I absolutely loved that movie.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
So you've got a book called Silver Screen Sources.
I do.
When did that come out?
That was published in 2015. It was about the result of about 10 years of research, about 4 years of writing. It went on way too long. Yeah. But it was it was a passion project, really. It was the culmination of all my sort of research into the interplay between UFOs and Hollywood, really. And I wanted to give a definitive accounting of the history of UFOs through the lens of Hollywood. Yeah,
because I mean, they go, sightings have gone back way before even Hollywood, so for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, I should think. I think Roswell must have been the first one that sort of got the media attention.
I mean, Roswell at the time wasn't a big deal when it happened in July of 1947. What had happened, obviously, in the summer months of 1947, hundreds of people around the world, but particularly in America, were reporting an increasing number of what they called flying discs, unusual objects in the skies. They were seen in the Second World War as well. They dubbed them Foo Fighters in the mid 40s, yeah. And then the phenomenon sort of evolved in the popular consciousness into flying saucers in the late 1940s and 1947. And then it was the Kenneth Arnold sighting in June of that year that in which the term flying saucer was coined by the press when Arnold saw nine crescent-shaped objects flying over the Cascade Mountains in Washington State. And the press then dubbed them flying saucers, not because they look like saucers, according to Arnold, but because they moved as if they were, as if you were skimming a plate or sort of saucer across water, and then the press dubbed them flying saucers. And then it was the following month, it was in July, that the press reported the crash of a flying saucer in the Roswell region of New Mexico. But that was so quickly covered up.
Yeah, with the weather balloon.
Yeah, there was within a matter of days, it all been essentially forgotten. And it was forgotten in ufology as well for many years. And it wasn't until the late 1970s that it came back into the UFO debate through people like Stanton Friedman, who started to interview the original witnesses. When those witnesses started to come out of the woodwork, because for decades they'd been silenced and scared and intimidated into silence by the Air Force, and then it was about 30 years later that they started to talk about it, and then it slowly started to weave its way into the UFO debate. And it wasn't until the early mid 1980s that Roswell was even a big thing at all. And it wasn't, until the early 90s, until Roswell really came out of ufology and started to penetrate into the popular consciousness beyond ufology. And that was thanks to Hollywood and the production of, say the 1994 movie Roswell, starring Kyle MacLachlan, and also through products like The X-Files, which starts to talk about Roswell. And even Independence Day as well. So it was through Hollywood's, it was Hollywood's sort of engagement with this subcultural case that brought it into the popular debate.
What reaction do you think you get from the UFO community about Hollywood?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I've always found that within the UFO community, people are very interested in how Hollywood engages with the subject.
Yeah.
But don't really have much understanding of what's going on there, because it is such a, I think it does require some understanding of how the industry works, of the history and processes of the industry, what goes on behind the scenes and things like that. I think there's a lot of wild speculation when it comes to Hollywood and UFOs within the UFO community. Like, for example, a lot of people think that Steven Spielberg has got all of the inside information and he's working for the government to try and release the information, et cetera, et cetera. It's not as simple as that. You know, in my research, I tried to interview as many filmmakers, producers, writers, directors as possible in order to understand how and why they made the films that they made and TV shows that they made, what was their motivation. And, you know, you'll find that for the most part, when Hollywood makes UFO movies, it's not because the government has told them to make UFO movies or because there's some big agenda. It's because the filmmakers, the writers, the producers are themselves interested in the subject. Either through direct experience or just because they're fascinated by it. And so they want to make movies about it, and they make movies about it. And you know, one of the core themes of my work is to try to convey the idea that, contrary to popular opinion, the UFO phenomenon is not the product of overactive imaginations fueled by Hollywood.
No, it's
vice versa.
True.
It's vice versa. It's actually vice versa. You know, the UFO sightings predated, or rather, sightings of flying saucers in their modern form in the post 1947. Sightings of flying saucers predated Hollywood's depictions of them by several years, by about 3 years. So you had obviously the explosion of the UFO phenomenon into pop culture in about 1947. It wasn't until three years after that that Hollywood made its first movie about UFOs called The Flying Saucer. And so it was the art that was inspired by life rather than vice versa. This is, you know, the flying saucer phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon would exist without Hollywood. Hollywood just engages with what people report. It engages with this subcultural community and these experiences that people are having on the fringe. It takes those reports and it weaves them into their own fictionalized Hollywood narratives. And in so doing, it popularizes the subject more broadly.
Yeah, everybody loves a good UFO movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, some of the most successful movies of all time are about aliens, alien contact in one form or another. You know, Avatar, even Star Wars, you know, Independence Day, so many movies. If you go through on the movie database and you look at the top 20, 30 movies of all time in terms of box office, you'll see that many of them are about alien contact in some form or another, something that fascinates us.
Yeah, I'm sure, because we all have, we're all fascinated about what is out there. So when you get movies like that, it just helps you sort of imagine what could be out there. I love that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It puts our dreams on the screen, really, doesn't it? It brings them to life.
Yeah. So, are you writing any other books?
I had a follow-up, another book, an edited volume that came out in 2017 called UFOs Reframing the Debate, which is actually a sort of a departure, really. It's not to do with Hollywood. It was more an expression of my frustration at the state of ufology. And what I decided to do was to bring together some of the more forward-thinking, controversial writers within the UFO field, and I brought them all together, and I edited a volume where they all present articles, essays about looking at this subject from alternative perspectives, not just through the lens of the extraterrestrial hypothesis, which of course is a completely valid hypothesis, and I personally think that there is probably some kind of actual extraterrestrial intelligence involved in the UFO phenomenon. But I think that to label it just as being aliens from outer space is far too simplistic, and it doesn't really tackle the full extent of what people are reporting in their encounters. And I think the phenomenon at its core is far more complex, even more bizarre than just extraterrestrial visitation. There's many things. I think it's multifaceted. And so the book was an attempt, so Reframing the Debate was an attempt to tackle the multifaceted nature of the subject, and to challenge some popular conceptions of the subject. And, to annoy people, I think, to some extent as well, to kind of ruffle some feathers within the mainstream ufological community. And it did that. It did get quite a lot of debate going in 2017 and into 2018. Now working on a follow-up to that, it's going to be a multi-volume project. Potentially could go on for many years. And we're going to have lots and lots of different authors in it. Contributing to these books, which will go on for, as I say, for several years. So it's an ongoing dialogue and ongoing debate, really.
And all about UFOs and aliens and entities and things like that.
Yeah. And one of the things that we tackle in Reframing the Debate is how the UFO phenomenon seems to overlap with other weird phenomena as well, which is something that traditional, you know, UFO researchers tended to either overlook, ignore, or sideline, because it was inconvenient. Because, you know, there's always been a fight to try to make UFOs seem legitimate in official culture. And so ufologists have always wanted to try and get the popular culture and official culture to engage with this and to respect it and understand it. And I think if you're going to do that, then you need to try and make it as scientific as possible. And of course, the extraterrestrial hypothesis does at its core, you know, is at its core a fairly sound scientific hypothesis, because we basically know that we're not alone in the universe. It's pretty much impossible that we're alone in the universe. Yeah. And we know, and theoretical physics allows for the possibility of interstellar travel as well. So the idea that aliens could be visiting us from another planet in another star system is perfectly feasible in theory. And so that's why that's been pushed so hard over the years. However, there are aspects of the UFO phenomenon that are frequently reported, but which, as I say, they're going to get sidelined or ignored because they seem too weird, almost too weird, and almost, I think, delegitimize the subject you know, for people who aren't accustomed to it.
So what spiritual or
paranormal.
Paranormal, so, yes, I absolutely agree with that actually.
Yeah, have you experienced anything like that, Jo, or known
anyone?
No,
I haven't. But I've talked to people that have that talk about the paranormal and the connection with aliens, and I find that fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are many, many, many cases. I mean, thousands and thousands of cases where people have reported experiences with UFOs, like for example, report a close encounter with a UFO or a fairly close encounter with a UFO. And then within the same time frame, within the coming days or weeks, they'll also have some kind of a poltergeist type experience. Or, for example, they'll even see some kind of a cryptid entity like Bigfoot or something like that, you know, something really out of the box that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
And people start to have very, very strange experiences. Almost like this is a multidimensional phenomenon, not just aliens, but that there is an overlap between something, but a far bigger unseen reality, and that UFOs are only one aspect of this. And I think when you get into that territory, it's harder to make a case, a serious case for UFOs, because we realize how little we really know.
Robbie, I've loved talking to you. I'm not going to keep you any longer.
Well, thanks, Jo. Yeah, it's been great talking to you, and yeah, really appreciate it. And hopefully we can talk again at some point.
Thank you very much, Robbie. Have a lovely week.
Thanks so much, Jo. Take care.
That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Associate producer Colette Cooper, and recorded at Hackenbacker Studios by Jamie Allen. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter Alien Nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Jo Wood, and I believe.